You know that credit card? Oh, you know what I'm talking about. The one that you're afraid to look at to see the balance? Ugh, scary. You've been avoiding your debt. It's time to confront it. That's right. Upstart can help you face it and finally pay it off. Find out how Upstart can lower your monthly payments today when you go to upstart.com/VIALL. That is upstart.com/VIALL. Don't forget to use the URL to let them know we sent you. Loan amounts will be determined based on your credit, income, and certain other information provided in your loan application. Go to upstart.com/VIALL.
You're crazy.
Hi, everybody. It's Nick. We have a great episode for you today. It's about human design. Have you ever wondered why you were made the way you are? Nature versus nurture kind of thing? Are you into horoscopes, personality tests? Well, we have a great episode for you. Human design is something I recently learned about, thought it'd be fascinating. More importantly, I thought you, dear listener, would be super into this topic. And I'm here to please you. So, we brought one of the world's leading experts in human design, Jenna Zoe. She was so gracious with her time. And she recorded an episode all the way from Switzerland.
Yeah.
Which I just find fascinating. I've never been. I wanted to go.
That was like a full-on Zoom production. So if the quality's a little, you know,
remember
it's like far. We did our best.
Oh, well, yeah. I actually recorded it out of my house.
Yeah.
So if you're for the people watching at home, hi. Welcome to my
home
bookshelf. Amanda and Allie are with us. Okay,
you can't hear a salute.
They're doing hand signals today. They also thought this episode was
fascinating.
Mind-blowing. So I really think you guys will like it. Nothing really new to report on my end other than thanks for listening. Tell your friends. Anyways, it's about to get wild. Get ready. Human Design is coming at you with Jenna Zoe, everybody. Jenna, thank you so much for joining us.
I'm really excited to talk to you.
So as we mentioned to our audience, you are one of world leading experts in human design. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yes. Even if you say that sounds funny, but yes.
Yeah, but I don't know how many people are familiar with what human design is. I didn't hear of it until just this week when I was made aware of who you were and thought, wow, this is really fascinating. We're always on the show kind of looking for different ways to understand ourselves, understand why we do things. I think, you know, we're always trying to, get to know ourselves. You know, we always kind of have these habits and personalities, and sometimes we wonder, do we get it from our parents? Do we get it from our surroundings, nature versus nurture type of stuff? And it seems like human design is a pseudoscience that, might help us give us some answers or people use to, you know, get some insight into their own lives. And so, I guess, why don't you give us a little background about what it is and how you found it?
Yeah, so it is a very new science and art. It was only discovered about 34 years ago, and it was channeled or created by a guy who, he heard a voice say to him, you know, go into meditation. He was already practiced in meditation, but he heard a voice started speaking to him. And basically what this voice was saying was that, you know, there's a lot of ancient wisdoms like astrology, the chakra system, the Chinese I Ching and Kabbalah that have been around for many years. And the voice was basically saying there's a way to combine all of these to, I guess, like a new sort of upgraded fashion of actually being able to look at how each individual's unique energy functions. So the idea behind human design is that we're all created very differently. We all have a different design. And so therefore us living in a world which says, this is the way to be successful. This is the way to be happy. This is the way to make money or have a happy relationship fails most of us because most of us aren't built the same way. And so it's about actually breaking us out of like this idea that everything is homogenous for everyone And when you know how you're uniquely designed, then that's how you know what your kind of like custom system or your custom roadmap looks like to the success, the love, the joy, the ease, the, you know, all the things that you want. So you're kind of like working with your energy rather than against it. And, you know, an easy way to figure out if you're working against your energy is whenever you come up across like, you know, where there isn't flow in your life. That's usually the universe's way of saying, you know, there's something you need to change here. I'm not kind of opening the doors for you so easily because this is not the way you're meant to be doing it. And so when we employ our energy correctly, yeah, it's just a lot more easy manifesting or making things happen, if you will. So basically what this guy did was he, you know, he had this information channeled into him. And the idea behind it is that it's a scientific calculation because it's based like astrology, based on the positions of the planets on the day and minute and time and place that you were born. The idea behind that being is that, you know, where you are right now, Nick, has a specific type of energy, and where I am right now has a certain type of energy. And therefore, when my soul is choosing to come in, it's going to choose a sort of perfect portal of energy through which it can come. And what we want to do is we want to figure out what that energy was like on the day and time and place you were born, because that's who you really are. That's your kind of like baseline energy. And so becoming your best self or whatever you want to call it isn't really about becoming much. It's about unbecoming or going back to who you were before the world told you how to be, before you were conditioned. And so that's how we can look at a chart that we put all your birth details into a piece of software, and we can figure out by looking at that, what are the certain traits and qualities and skills that you chose to come here with, and how can we then focus you on those rather than the things that you think you might have to learn how to do in order to get what you want.
Oh, interesting. So when you say, are you like referring to like our soul when you say like, the skills or tools we chose to come here with, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, is that like a divine presence? Like when you, and like, and when you say a voice, I mean, who is the guy who came up with it? What was his name for people who want to maybe do some research on him?
Yeah. His name was Ra Uruhu. If you Google the history of human design, it's all there. It took place from the 3rd of January until the 11th of January, 1987. And, he basically sat in an 8-day meditation, and this all just came to him. This idea of like, if you look at a human design chart, which you can do, if you go to myhumandesign.com and put in your birth information, you'll see what a chart looks like. And basically you'll see it kind of looks like the chakras. It's like a mapping of your energy body. And it's based on the idea that if you want to get a little scientific with me now, it's based on the idea that we live in a sea of neutrinos. Neutrinos are subatomic particles that basically they all contain energy and they all contain information. And a lot of the subatomic particle streams, the major ones that are coming to planet Earth right now, are coming from Earth itself, the sun, and the different planets within our solar system. And so essentially mapping the position of all those different things and the angles that they were in on the day you were born kind of tells you what energies were coming from which angles, directions, which ones you were receiving, which ones you kind of chose to not be receiving, essentially. And so that tells you about what it was that you needed for this lifetime, if you believe in karma, if you believe in achieving what you came to achieve, whatever languaging you like to use. But interestingly enough, you know, you asked me about soul, the guy Ra, he was actually not spiritual or religious much at all. He didn't talk about soul. He kind of was like very, you know, he was very sort of like rudimentary and crude about life on Earth. So what's cool about that is I do believe that this is something, in my experience, has been able to appeal to people who are very, very spiritual, and then people who are just more kind of like, you know what, I just need tools, give them to me, and, you know, that's all I need to know.
Fuck credit card debt. Hey, listen, we like to buy things, we get excited, and then we like, hey, screw it, I'll worry about it later. But now you have to worry about it now, when Upstart can help you solve those problems that you're so afraid to face. That's right, because your credit cards, those bills are adding up, and Upstart is here to help you deal with it, help you pay down your loans. Upstart is the fastest and easiest way to get a personal loan to pay off your debt online.
Whether it's paying off credit cards, consolidating high interest debt, or funding personal expenses, over 500,000 people have used Upstart to get a simple fixed monthly payment. Upstart finds smarter rates with trusted partners because they assess more than just your credit score. With a 5-minute online rate check, you can see your rate upfront for loans for $1,000 to $50,000. You can get approved the same day and you can receive funds as fast as one business day. So to find out how Upstart can lower your monthly payment today, when you go to upstart.com/VIALL, that's upstart.com/VIALL. Don't forget to use the URL to let them know we sent you. That is right. Loan amounts will be determined based on your credit, income, and certain other information provided in your loan application. Go to upstart.com/VIALL.
Yeah. Well, one question that actually Amanda came up with, and it's interesting. You're seeing a rise in some of these, call it alternative points of view, pseudosciences or things like that, astrology, human design, like the chakra, and maybe they've been, you know, some of them have been around forever, Enneagrams and personality tests. Like, are they seen by, say, someone like you? It's not like necessarily considered a religion. They can go, like, if someone's Christian or Buddhist or whatever they might practice, they can still look into human design and benefit from it. Like you said, it seems like you kind of reverse engineer, you kind of go back to the beginning when someone was born, and like you said, understand like the energy that they were receiving when they were born. Is it something that people then can use, whether it's in the profession they're in or the relationship they're in, to enhance the situation they're in? Or is it more of maybe helping someone kind of alter the direction they go in their life? You know, if all of a sudden you're just like, oh wait, yeah, that makes a lot of sense, and I don't want to be an accountant anymore, you know, like, no wonder I hate my job. Or does it allow us to maybe just make subtle changes in our lives to just overall feel more fulfilled?
It's not to say, oh, you should be an artist. It's not really that. It's about how to use your energy. So let's say, for example, I might tell you that you were designed to be inconsistent, and therefore a morning routine is never going to work for you. It's not going to bring out the best in you because inconsistency is in your chart. And so whenever you're trying to fit into a routine, it's actually going to constrict your energy and actually not make you feel as free. It's not going to make you feel like, oh, I can just automate it and then it's going to get the best out of me for my day. Like, for half the population that works, and the other half, it doesn't work, right? So what I like about it so much is that it's practical. And so it is exactly like, this is how you can show up better in a relationship. This is how you can show up better at work. These are the traits that you need to be bringing more at the forefront of what you offer and what you kind of, apply into everything that you do. So it's very practical, which I like, because I do feel, and I was someone who was kind of lost for my whole entire 20s, chasing a lot of spiritual and also success and motivational tools, but not feeling like all of them necessarily would give me like the total kind of result or bring me back to myself. And so I still was feeling very off center. So the cool thing about this is it's like, oh no, this is not you doing it my way, because I'm like a guru or a, you know, success coach or anything like that. It's just, this is your way, and remember that. And so then you can make those practical adjustments, like giving up your morning routine if you are inconsistent. That's just one example. Or if your digestion is to eat hot food, then you stop drinking ice cold smoothies and, cold lattes and those types of things. But then there's other things, like, you know, some people are supposed to be motivated by money. Some people are supposed to be motivated by fame or being seen, or this idea that they want to make an impact. Some people are not supposed to be motivated by any of those things. So it actually runs a whole gamut, and it's incredibly deep. You know, you can go 8-10 hours into one person's design.
The world is burning, my friends, and
the world is on fire.
I feel a little nutty sometimes. I need to talk about it. That's all I'm saying. If there's something interfering with my happiness, I like to talk to a mental health care professional to help me get back to neutral. And BetterHelp is helping people across the country, quite frankly, across the world, with their ability to assess your mental health needs and align you with a mental health care professional that helps you, you know, talk about your feelings. you can start communicating in under 48 hours. It's not a crisis line. No, it's not a self-help. It's a professional counseling done securely online, conveniently from your home, as long as you just have an internet connection. BetterHelp is committed to facilitating the great therapeutic matches so they can make it easy and free to exchange counselors if you need. It's more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid is available. BetterHelp wants you to start living a happier life today. So visit their website, read their testimonials that are posted daily so you don't have to take my word for it. Visit betterhelp.com/vialfiles. That's V-I-A-L-L-F-I-L-E-S. That is better, H-E-L-P. And join the over 1 million people who have already taken charge of their mental health through with the help of an experienced professional. In fact, so many people have been using BetterHelp, they are recruiting additional counselors in all 50 states. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp, and VialeFile listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/VialeFiles, V-I-A-L-L-F-I-L-E-S. Natural habits, people. Essential oils made easy to use that are specialized and blend to help do all sorts of things, but specifically headaches. Let's focus on headaches today because we get them all the time, and sometimes we have to take things like ibuprofen and Advil, but we don't really want to. Terrible for our stomachs.
Amanda had a headache the other day, and I pulled out the center right out my purse, and I said, girl, and we put it right on her.
I brought some in for the ladies today, and you can have yours too, whether you want to roll it out on your body or diffuse it in a diffuser. NHOils.com, code Chrissy for up to 25% off free shipping. Check out our lineup today at NHOils.com. Trust me, if you struggle with headaches, try a less invasive, healthier approach to dealing with those headaches. It's a first approach.
Yeah.
Right? And
lit on the back of your
neck.
It
may not be the all-bail. It's not a cure-all, but it's certainly a great way to limit the amount of medications or certainly ibuprofen that you're using to deal with your headaches. And when you feel one coming on, quick use those oils, and often it deals with it right away. NHOils.com, code Chrissy, 25% off. That's
very cool. That's fascinating.
So I discovered human design, I think 8 years ago now, and I've been doing it properly professionally for four.
Your family, friends, you know, relationships, is it important for you to get them to understand their chart, or at least for you to understand, or do you kind of like, you know, listen, this is my profession. If you want to, I'm open to it, but you let kind of people come to you when they're ready, which
it's a good question. And actually, that will also depend on your chart. So how you put things on people depends on your energy as well. And so for me, which is the same as you, actually, we're the same energy type, which is a type called a projector. There are five types. We have to be invited, meaning that people need to want us to tell them something before we can kind of just like volunteer our like wisdom or our guidance or our knowledge or whatever it is that we're going to share with people. So there has to be the desire from another person. We can't just be like, I want to, you know, tell you this or blah, blah, blah. I've always kind of waited until I gauge some level of interest in people. It doesn't necessarily mean that they were kind of vocally expressing interest, but I kind of sense that they were into it. So for example, like my dad still hasn't asked me, and therefore we haven't talked about it, but I've obviously looked to his to help me understand him better. And I'll never forget that one of the most healing, beautiful moments of my relationship with my mom was her asking me to read her chart. And when I did, there was so many things that she does that I had assumed she does them for the same reasons that I do them. And that's what created judgment in me for her. But seeing how she works created so much acceptance and so much understanding from me to her that it was actually a beautiful moment, because I saw how differently to me that she's built, and then was able to revere and respect how she is for who she is. So mostly, you know, now that it's however many years in, people do ask me, but in the beginning, definitely no one was interested. That's for sure. And I just waited.
It sounds like this could be a tool for people in all sorts of relationships who are having conflict to do. And, you know, whether they believe in it or not, you know, where they might sit down and find, like you said, I mean, a lot of any relationship that's having problems, like you said, there's judgment, there's misunderstanding. You know, you go in any relationship that starts, there's a lot of love and there's a lot of excitement, and over time that can change, right? Because we change as individuals, you know, we new forces and new people come into play, we make friends, we change careers, and as we grow, sometimes we can grow apart with even the people we feel like we should be closest with, and that comes with that is that judgment and that misconceptions of each other. And I can see how, like, if you do this in a relationship, it might open some doors where you feel like you get some information where you could be misunderstanding one another. I suppose you have to be open-minded to a certain extent, otherwise you're just like, oh, that's stupid. But as you say, I'm guessing a lot of times when you read people, their charts, whether they're resistant or not, there's some aha moments of, like, do you find people who are like, oh, this is, I don't know, it's hocus pocus stuff, but they reluctantly sit down and you read their chart, and all of a sudden there's this these light bulbs start going off.
Does that happen a lot for you? Myself anymore, because I created a whole business out of it now. I train people to be readers and that whole thing. But it used to happen to me a lot with women. I would do their readings and they'd be like, oh, you have to do one for my boyfriend, and you know, they'd kind of come on and be like, okay, yeah. But you know, there's no denying when you tell someone what they're like, that if you're accurate about it, then you usually get a positive result. And most people, whether or not they're spiritual seekers, most people want to know what more of what they are. Most people want to hear about how they function, how they work, and everything.
We definitely love to hear more about us, for sure. Most people are, regardless of what their chart says, we're pretty eager to hear about ourselves. I think for most people, there is a sincere desire to understand themselves. I think as we do get older, you know, and we separate from our parents' nest, so to speak, and we go out into the world, I think that's why I think a lot of people in their 20s feel sometimes literally lost. You know, they're maybe even in their 30s, sometimes even as they get older, they sometimes fail. They look in the mirror and either don't like who they are, don't recognize who they are, or they just feel a bit of a disconnect. And there's always this ongoing desire for people to continue to find that. Because when we have those moments in our lives where we're either humbled or we face some sort of adversity, it allows us to be a little bit more open. And when we do that, there's a very comforting feeling of, you know, being okay, and that almost acceptance for ourselves, right? Like, we judge, you know, you talk about judgment and acceptance with people in our lives, but we do that with ourselves all the time. Mm-hmm. You're like, I fucking hate that about me, or why do I do what I do, you know? Especially when other people are like, oh, that's so annoying about you. Why do you do that? And you're like, I honestly wish I knew why. I hate it too. I understand it's a weakness of mine, and we get very frustrated with ourselves often.
And when you can understand the reasons why, whether they're because that's part of who you inherently are and it's there for a reason, or you do it because you felt like you had to start doing it at some point along the way and therefore you're now free to drop it, both of those realizations are beautiful.
So I might find out why I refuse to fold laundry or close cabinet doors behind me. And then when I find out the reason why, I can tell everyone around me that I no longer have to feel guilty or responsible, because you told me I have to leave close cabinet doors, like, I don't necessarily have to.
You're somebody who's very efficient and you only want to do things that you think is going to have like a direct use. So I'm literally just picking that up from your chart now. And so therefore, if you don't think that you're necessarily going to get if there's not an obvious benefit to you for doing that, you are going to want to conserve your energy, whether consciously or that's just kind of part of the patterning. So doing those things, or that might seem like a waste of your time and attention.
Wow, that makes a lot of sense. Should we dive into my chart as a way for people to kind of understand how this works?
Yeah, absolutely.
And just have some fun with it?
As I was saying to you, you know how in astrology you have like your sun sign and you have your moon sign and your rising, all those different types of aspects?
Yeah. I'm familiar with those terms. I haven't had fully read my chart.
Oh, you should get, I have a good astrologer for you if you want to interview somebody. Someone who, she's,
yeah. We had one. We talked to my, I don't know if you know who Ricky Williams is. He's a former football player, but he's since has very passionate into astrology. We had a really rich episode about him. He didn't read my chart on the show, but we did talk about it. But I am familiar with those terms.
Your sort of like top line thing that you can look at if you're looking at your chart in human design, which is like the same as looking at what's your sun sign, if it's the only thing you know in astrology, is like what's your sign, right? What we have in human design is called energy type, and your energy type is basically it describes to you how you use your energy best. So how you exchange energy with other people, how you use it, how you get it, those types of things. And so you are what's called a projector in human design. And a projector is a person who basically is not here to, you know, do. A projector is here because they see something in a different way that other people don't see. And so therefore, they're not here to create energy necessarily. They're here to shape and guide other people's energy. So I like to tell people that projectors are like the birds up in the trees, and all the sort of like, you know, animals are trying to find a way through the jungle or whatever. And the birds are the ones that say, you know, go this way or try it like this, or this is a quicker way to get there. Or so they're kind of like tweaking and hacking and improving and upgrading. And essentially, you know, the big thing about being a projector is if you try to compete and be like a lion and a tiger and all those kinds of things, then you're always going to end up feeling bitter, actually, and feeling annoyed that you're not more successful than you are. And so as a projector, it's really important to understand that you are here as a guide for the rest of society. So that doesn't necessarily mean like directly a guide, like, you know, me sitting here and telling someone one-on-one what to do. I know projectors that are lawyers, projectors that design tech, because they can obviously see how, you know, things can be made better and improvement. It's not about what you do. It's about the energy that you bring to what you do, basically. The other thing is that the second thing that you look at when you look at someone's human design is that you look at what is it in their body that makes their major life decisions, how their intuition functions, right? And everybody has a part of their body that is kind of like the MVP of their decision-making and of their intuition. And yours is your instinct. So for you, like, I don't know if you've ever even identified, you know, this whole explanation of, you know, it's a gut feeling. You feel it in your gut. I would hazard a guess that you've never actually viscerally, physically felt it in your gut when something's telling you it's on or off. It's more of an instinct for you, which is like that quicker kind of just like, it's a yes or a no. It's a hit. Like, you just kind of understand it. Like, either it's you're getting it or you're not getting it.
Yeah, I've always excelled.
Yes.
In that.
So the instinct that is housed in the spleen, and so that means that your intuition is splenic. So that means that you're so far you would call yourself a splenic projector, and so the spleen is the part of you that, you know, gets to make all your major life decisions. So when you are, when you're at a fork in the road or trying to decide what to do with your life, usually what happens with the spleen and how that intuition functions is that it's very in the moment and it only speaks to you that one time. So the spleen is like a small, quiet voice that kind of passes you by in the moment and says yes. And you might not even know why, and it won't make logical sense. You won't know why you just felt the yes or why you just felt the no. But the thing about the spleen is it only speaks to you that one time. And so the best thing to do for people who are trying to refine their intuition, if their spleen is their kind of main intuition, is to note down what that voice said to you in the moment, because what will then probably happen to you is we've all been conditioned to believe that it's the mind that's supposed to be making the decision. So then you'll go away and say, but I should do this, and this makes sense, especially because you also have quite a propensity for logic though as well, right? And you have a good propensity and tendency towards analysis and kind of honing in on all of that. That's wonderful. And that's supposed to be used for other things like projects that you put your energy into, but it's not meant to be used for how you make your life decisions. So the best thing to do is actually to write down, like even just in notes on your phone, of what those splenic hits say to you in the moment. Let the time pass, analyze it, allow yourself to do all that, but then revisit it and see what the spleen was telling you. And even if you're not necessarily brave enough to listen to what the spleen was telling you and do what the spleen was telling you, what will happen is you'll build up enough evidence over time to see that the spleen was actually leading you in the right direction. And then that will be easier to trust the spleen and get out of the mind and into the instinct. Now, just to kind of give you the the full gamut. For some people, they are meant to be using their mind. A very, very small percentage of the population, actually only 2%. Most people are supposed to be using their emotions. Some people are supposed to be using their gut. Some people are supposed to be using their heart and their ego. Some people are supposed to be using other people to like rebound off and kind of like discuss things with people and use other people as a sounding board. So if you're sitting here thinking like, oh, isn't everyone's instinct, which is a lot of people when they hear about themselves, they're like, doesn't everyone function like that? The answer is definitely no. And there are genuinely some people, a lot of people that do feel it in their gut, right? So, it's important to make that distinction because each one of those functions in such a different fashion. Now, you're also what's called a 3-5, and that's your profile in human design. So that's your third thing. And the profile in human design is kind of like your personality and how you show up. And the 3-5 in human design, which is yours, and there are 12, the 3-5, which is yours, is what we call the great life experimenter. So what that means is that you don't learn by what you read in books. You weren't born just knowing everything and not needing to go through it. You learn by life, right? So you learn by like trying things out and experimenting and like what life has kind of taught you based on the experiences that you go through. Now for 3-5 people, they're the most lovable and relatable people because they've actually been through so many like ups and downs and their life kind of feels like a roller coaster and it's like worthy of a movie usually, right? So for you, your kind of life is always feeling like, you know, it's got many different colorful experiences to it. But the reason why you go through those things is so that other people can then learn vicariously through you because it's like almost having a CV for knowing what you share because you can say, I've been through these things and that's how I can back up what I know is because I have the experience, right? And so for you, like, you know, doing a lot of reading and learning and absorbing information is great if it's part of your passion and it will be because you're a projector, so you do love to learn, but that's not how you absorb information. How you get to wisdom is through life. Now on the outside world of you, like the inside world of you is like, I try and I fail and these roller coasters, but a lot of other people around you don't see that part of you. So how you see yourself is never how other people see you. Other people see you as someone who wants to help everybody, someone who wants to save the day, someone who's very personable, someone who likes, who's as friendly and as interested in like friends and strangers alike and likes to champion friends and strangers alike. And yes, people, like I said, people like to learn very vicariously through you. So, you know, it's a very important part of how you show up. Has the pandemic been just quite challenging on you because of just not being able to like meet people or see people or any of that stuff?
Yes and no. You know, I'm thinking about all the things you were saying, kind of digesting it. I kind of borderline on both introvert and extrovert. I have both tendencies. I very much miss a lot of the aspects that the pandemic took away from us, being in crowds. Like I love the extrovert part of me loves going to events and crowds and or even movie theaters and feeling the energy of the crowd and the experience. The introvert in me will want to hone in on a small group of people and just have rich dialogue there.
Yes.
And you know what I'm saying? And not necessarily be like, I don't want to talk to everyone. I want to like find specific conversations to have, right? You know, sometimes I've been described by people as either aloof or intimidating because sometimes I'm in my head thinking about things, but I do like interacting with people, but sometimes I like doing it on my own terms, if that makes sense. So in the beginning of the pandemic, I was okay. I kind of thrived. I was almost, at first I was like, this isn't so bad. Part of it was because I was like, well, I don't feel the thing I don't feel FOMO, you know, it was like, no one else is doing anything, so I don't feel like I'm missing out on anything. And then over time, it's been draining where I've been missing the energy of people. And so when we started getting out a little bit or even just, you know, going to the studio instead of recording from home, like those little moments were really rewarding for me just because I was able to have some interaction with just people. So
yes, absolutely. So, and it is interesting because I like what you say, and it's perfectly said that most people do have some aspects of introversion and aspects of extroversion. I think we've been taught that it's a scale, that it's a binary, but it's a scale. So, you know, for you, the introversion parts of you are because you really see into people when you're interacting with someone. So your aura is very penetrating into the other. And so you do, your energy does work really well when it's like focused on people and just kind of really going into a person. It's not, you know, just having a large, like it's, that's not how you use your gifts best. But on the other hand, you know, the five part of that 3-5, which is the external part of you, the three is the internal, the five, you know, does need the kind of that sort of like universality of people, the connection to, you know, just getting in an Uber and, you know, just seeing life and the world and that sort of, you know, part happening as it happens. So it is interesting, you know, one of the big things I do try to do is get people away from I'm an introvert or I'm an extrovert, because you're always locking away a different, another aspect of how your introversion specifically looks to you or how your extroversion specifically looks to you.
It's like society has told us what it means to be an extrovert or introvert. And then we decide which one we are. And then we immediately start judging ourselves or we have these preconceived notions of what it means. And then therefore we start, you know, it kind of warps over. Yeah. I don't think it helps us understand. It almost makes us start judging ourselves a little bit more, because I think so many people see it as binary.
We cut literally half of our real self off, or of the connection to that other half off, because we stop identifying as it. Right. And that's another big problem with, you know, a lot of the languaging around personality and describing oneself and getting to know oneself these days is it isn't nuanced enough. It isn't, we're not comfortable as a society living in the nuance. We want to say, I'm either this or I'm that. You're either open-minded or closed-minded. Instead of saying, you know what? Some people are very open-minded in areas that they like to be open-minded in. And then everyone is actually closed-minded in areas where they are a bit blocked themselves, or areas where they have fear of, you know, not being so binary or black and white, or where they've been taught that it's that way and they don't want to, you know, remove themselves from that construct for whatever reason. So getting people more comfortable in the nuance is also what breeds a lot of acceptance, not only for themselves, but then also mostly for other people. And as we can see, that's a huge problem that is impeding us as a society right now.
Before we continue on to my chart, I had a question that you mentioned. You know, you mentioned, like, for me, like the spleen, my gut, the intuition, but you mentioned some people should be listening to their egos. And I find that very fascinating, because I often tell, like, my audience, it's like our egos are telling us useful things. But you would argue that there are certain groups of people that might benefit them from them. Can you explain that?
It depends how you define the ego. If there's a lot of spiritual texts that describe, they use the word ego for the fear voice or the negative voice inside of you. The original, the Freudian sort of concept of ego is the sense of I, and what do I want, right? And so for some people, it's healthy for them to be making decisions on based on what their egoic material wants are. So, you know, based on, is this going to make me money? Is this going to make me successful? You know, and that's what they go by, basically. And in human design, the ego and the heart are the same thing. So it's not this concept of ego of like that evil voice inside you that's going to destroy you. The ego is the sense of I, in the truly sort of like in the psychoanalytical definition of ego, basically. There are some people who are egoic, and it's energetically correct for them to be operating by listening to the ego, because they actually don't have consistent emotions, gut or splenic instincts like yours to go on, to rely on.
Very cool. Oh, that's really cool.
So I was going to say to you, you are what's called a non-emotional in human design. It's really interesting, because about 50% of the population is emotional and 50% of the population is non-emotional. And next, I'll go on to explain to you what those are. But essentially, you know, and the person who taught me human design, you know, said to me that it's almost a bigger distinction between being male, but it's like bigger of a difference than male and female, like being emotional versus being non-emotional. And to really understand this, this is a big one for relationships. Like if I'm ever, the first thing that I look at, if I'm doing a chart for a couple, you know, and there's conflict or whatever, this is always the biggest thing to look at and the first thing to look at. So this is actually probably going to be quite interesting for your audience. So you're what's called a non-emotional. What does that mean? That doesn't mean that you don't feel emotions. It means that you only feel emotions if something is happening, right? Like a situation outside of you is causing the emotion, or a person that is walking into the room, and because you're a sponge for emotions, because you absorb other people's emotions and you can feel and magnify other people's emotions, you're picking up on those things, and therefore that's why you're feeling them. So for me, for example, I'm an emotional and I don't pick up on what other people are feeling. So if I walk into the room with you and I'm feeling a level like 2 out of 10 annoyed, I'll have zero visibility on the fact that I'm annoyed, but you're going to feel that. And you're going to feel it in your body in like a 6 out of 10 way. And if you don't know that that's coming from me, then I'm going to look at you and say, why are you annoyed? Because you're magnifying that and reflecting that back to me. And you're going to say, I don't know. And I'm going to blame you. But you're, if you don't know that what you're picking up on is magnifying what I'm doing, then originally you're supposed to serve as a mirror for me to help me see what kind of just mood I just happen to be randomly in that day, which is what emotional people are. We can wake up sometimes and be happy for no reason or sad for no reason. And we live our whole lives on these emotional waves, right? So often in a relationship, you have to look at who is the emotional, who is the one that has these ups and down, ups and these downs, and who is the mirror. And sometimes you have two emotionals and sometimes you have two non-emotionals too. And those are different dynamics as well. But it's really interesting to know sometimes the non-emotional people actually get called the most reactive or the most emotional because they are reflecting and magnifying what the emotional person doesn't see that they themselves are feeling. So for you, you know, what I would do is that whenever you feel like overly happy or overly sad, it serves as intel and it makes you very emotionally intelligent and very empathic, because that's a signal that someone else who's around you, who might be probably unaware of what it is that they're going through, you can actually be able to tell them about it, and you can be the reflection that shows them where they're at, so they can hopefully, you know, get out of this kind of being mired by your own emotions so much that emotional people are in perpetually and don't always see.
Yeah. So if I felt like, or I've been told that I'm good at reading situations or good at reading people, and that would help explain
that's
that.
One of the ways in which you're good at reading people. The other way that you're really good at reading people is in, there's another center in your chart called the G center. And that's to do with, being able to read the room, read the different, I guess, like vibes of people, because, you can be quite a chameleon and you can walk into a room and feel what the room needs from you and kind of present that, rather than just like, think about that spiritual advice of like, always be yourself. For you, it's not that you're not being yourself, but you know which different aspects to kind of pull out, because you're quite good at reading the room. So your center for identity is actually quite open and flexible. And then also you can sense agendas and people's motivations very easily. So the way that you read people is across usually those three forms combined. Most people have one way at least in which they can kind of feel people. One of those ways is usually the primary way. Mm-hmm. And so those would be your three.
Being able to read people's motivations is something I've always felt like it's come very easily to me. So that's interesting to hear.
Those kind of motivations are not always necessarily negative. It's about the consciousness behind those things that drives those things. So for example, some people, it's energetically correct that they just want to make a ton of money. You can sense that. And so if you sense that in somebody and they're, for example, in denial of it, you can actually help them to say, hey, this actually is a good thing for you. And I think you should chase that and embrace that, you know, or you see someone that, you know, is trying to chase fame, but they're doing it with the wrong kind of consciousness. You can also, that's one of the ways that I think you can really guide people in terms of like helping them define what they're motivated by and what they're, that's actually, I would say that's a good focus of yours, you know, helping people refine their, what drives them in life.
Interesting. Yeah, I do a little bit of that already, but yes, that's, yeah, on this podcast, we have a show where people call it and ask for questions.
That's amazing. And actually the question asking format is perfect for you because you have what's called a passive brain. So a passive brain doesn't always know what it knows. Like, let's say, for example, the back of everything you know is like a huge library, okay? But you've spent years putting things in that library, so you don't know what you know. Sometimes it takes a person coming and asking you the question, and also don't forget the question is the invitation, what we were speaking about in the beginning of being a projector. Yeah. The question is the invitation of that person saying, you know, I need your guidance. Tell me what you have. That format works perfectly for your energy type. Being a projector, people wanting your guidance, but it also helps you pick out the best information, because the very presence of someone asking a question helps pull it out of you more easily than if you were just to, okay, Nick, take the stage and talk about this for 45 minutes type of thing. So that works very well for you, actually.
Might be the most relatable thing you said to me, because I do feel that, where if someone were to be like, I need that guide, and the guidance is the question. I get that a lot, you know, too. It's just like, I don't really know how to start. For me, it's the match of, and then once I get the question, that mindset really felt very relatable to my brain, in terms of, I feel very comfortable going and sitting down and saying, all right, what do you have? Mm-hmm. Like, there's no preparation.
Yeah.
I just have it there. I just need a place to start to go get it. And that was really.
Do you want to talk a little bit about your digestion? For you, it's actually very healthy. I know there's a lot of, and this is one of my favorite things to do. One of the things that is so fundamental to human design. In human design, you have what's called the four transformations, which are four different things to get really aligned in your life to, how do I put this? To develop your genius. And the first one to get right is the body, right? Like the food, the digestion, all those types of things. And so, you know, it's one of the big focuses of what I like to talk about, because if you get the body right, then usually the brain and the mind and the spirit, whatever you want to call it, sort of can fall into place, but you need to have that right foundation first. And, you know, there's a lot of health information that says you need to get the variety in and you need to switch it up and blah, blah, blah. For you, it's actually very, you already know what you're not going to like before you try it. And,
I'm
it's good for you
habit,
to eat the
sometimes.
Same thing every day. Yeah. And it's actually good for you to only change seasonally as well. To only change what you eat seasonally. So for you to eat the same breakfast, lunch, and dinner for 3 months is actually good, because it helps you.
That's so
is it? You do that already? That's great.
Oh my God,
awesome. Yeah. Well, it's a huge help. But the nice thing about knowing it, even if you're doing it already, is like, okay, now I never have to question it. I never have to think, oh my God, but what if I'm missing out on this?
I've been defensive about this with people who are in my surroundings, of like telling me I need more variety or I need to mix it up. And I'm like, why? I don't understand. And then when I do, I'm always disappointed, you know, in that sense of like, and that there's certain levels that I've tried more and more things, and sometimes I'm surprised and pleasantly surprised. But most of the time, it's just like, I, for example, like I'm going to this restaurant because there's a particular meal of food that I like. I'm going to that restaurant for that meal. I'm not going there. Like my dad will be like, oh, well, there's so many options. Let's take advantage of the options. I'm like, no, I'm coming for this. And I've had to defend my wanting to go to get that particular meal. There are restaurants that I've gotten the same meal at for 15 years, you know?
Yeah.
And that's just who I am. And I'm tired of having to defend that.
There
so
we go.
You.
You've got it recorded. I've never met you before. I've never seen you eat nothing. So, well, the reason why you are that way is because you have a very old digestive system, which originates from the time when we as species started gathering, right? So after hunting, we had gathering. And, you know, when you gathered, things were very seasonal. Things if there was apples in season for the whole of fall, then you would just be eating apples all day. And so your system doesn't like the variety, because it runs very counter to how, you know, your digestive system is built. So I'll give you an example is Nadine Leopold. She's an ex-Victoria's Secret supermodel. She has the same digestive system as you. And she tells a story of when, you know, before she thought she had to, you know, eat certain ways to get skinny and prepare for the runway and the whole thing. And against all conventional God knows what, she now looks better, feels better, everything, because she eats, she's happy. She eats sushi every night. She wakes up and has the same breakfast, the same lunch. It's not necessarily the healthiest thing, but she just has it on automation and she's so happy and she's thriving and the whole thing. So, you know, what we know about these things and what we think is like, it's true for everyone, or this is fact, or this is science. It just doesn't, we're really waking up to the fact that we all are so different. Actually, on the level of digestion, though, a very big part of what you are here to do, though, is to treat your body very well, is to kind of do a lot of the, you know, taking care of yourself, learning to love your physicality, be in your physicality as well, is a very big part of your sort of karmic journey, if you believe in incarnations, this specific lifetime for you. It hasn't been a part of every single lifetime. So it's not like just a part of who you are. It's a part of who you chose to be this time around. So there's likely a lesson there, which for you, I see as really being because you do take that logical part of you so easily, and because you do find it very easy to analyze and be very, I forget which one they call it, left brain or right brain, which is the one that's like very, you know,
is, I think left brain.
I can't remember. I but yeah, whatever that is. So
yeah,
part of it is because you are so in your mind, you know, whenever you're in your mind, you're not physically feeling your body and in your body. So for you, there's a really strong need to marry the two together. And obviously you, a lot of your personal power and mastery will come from being able to kind of know when it's right to switch between both, taking the cues from your body and then using your mind more for the outside than for yourself. So you actually, every time you use your mind on yourself, imagine you wake up with a certain amount of battery that you use, that you have, like brain power or mind power or whatever for the day. The more of it you use on thinking about yourself and analyzing yourself, the less of it you have available to develop your genius towards the outside world. And so what you want to do is automate your personal decisions so much for being from the spleen, being from that intuition, being from feeling your body, being from just eating that same thing every day and not thinking about it and not overanalyzing yourself, so that you can conserve that brain battery, that daily brain battery, on looking at the outside world and really doing what you do so well, which is being able to understand concepts quite easily and also being able to explain them to people in a way that is very logical and easy to understand, right? So it's very easy for you to get inspired. It's very easy for you to reach for insight and conclusions. But you just don't want to be wasting it on trying to figure out your own life.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah. And it's interesting when you say that, like, I can get consumed by my own bullshit, so to speak. But when I do, it's probably when I am I'm the most unsatisfied, or I feel the most miserable, right? Whether there's something about myself that I will start obsessing over for whatever reason, I feel really out of sorts. So that's interesting.
But it's difficult for you because you also feel a pressure to perfect. So there is a drive. Your biggest kind of drive in life is actually to keep on improving, whether it's yourself or other people, or seeing where things are not perfect and then knowing what it is that needs to be done in order to get it to perfect.
That would make sense too. Yeah, because when I am in my own bullshit, it's that burning desire to either meet my expectations or what I perceive as others' expectations of me.
Absolutely. And that's also very interesting in relationships, because a lot of the time people who have that, their partners feel subject to criticism or not feeling like they measure up. But on the positive side, you know, you can be a great, like, because you are a guide, you're a projector, you know, the person that you're with has to have that desire to want to know how to be better all the time and want the help and not see it as a, you know, as a negative thing, but, you know, have that same orientation towards that as you. Because basically in human design, when we talk about skills, there is no like, okay, you use your ability to see what could be perfected or see what could be better just with your kids, but not with your wife or your husband or not at work. The universe doesn't compartmentalize that way. So it's like whenever we have a skill or a gift, we're supposed to bring it to every area of our of our outside life, if that makes sense, like all the things, the different roles that we take on. So you are going to be someone who's, you know, you are going to ride other people hard, but it's a question of obviously knowing how to do it with when people are interested, right? Because you have to be invited. You have to make sure that the people in your life are interested in knowing, to a certain extent. And that will give you the sign that they are the energetically correct people for you to be in, to enter into a dynamic with. Because if it's wrong for you, then by default, it's also wrong for them, right? So there has to be the invitation from them and the recognition of you as being able to do that and having that inclination. And then you obviously communicating it in a way that is, you know, with high consciousness and stuff. But that's, you know, that's a sort of second layer of it all.
It's really, really fascinating. Very cool.
Anything else that we should touch on? We could go on forever. There's so many different layers to it, but I guess because you said to me that a lot of your listeners are interested in relationships. I think one other thing that I want to say is that, you know, this science can tell you, for example, whether you're someone when you're in an argument, whether you can process things very quickly and whether you can, you know, if you're in an argument, can you say it in the moment is how you feel and that's how you feel, or which is you, or can you, you know, oh, actually in the moment, you're not really saying anything that you mean. And then the next day you kind of digest it and think about it again. So I recommend for those people to not actually have those kind of straight confrontations in the moment, for example. And also some people's relationships are meant to be based on, sometimes you're attracted to people because there is a lot of harmony, where that would mean that your relationship is mostly based on kind of friendship and similarity. Whereas on the other side of the scale, when you have a lot of differences with people, then that creates a feeling of being complete by someone, but it also creates, and it creates a lot of physical chemistry, but it also means that there's not a lot of friendship and similarity and feeling like that person super duper understands you because they're built so differently. And obviously most people's relationships are somewhere in the middle of that scale, but I've seen relationships run the whole gamut of that. So again, there is no right or wrong. It's just what people kind of fall for. And the biggest question that people ask me with relationships is like, well, is a projector good with a manifesting generator, or it can, you know, what types match with what types? And the answer really is that it isn't about anyone being compatible or not compatible. If you're attracted to somebody, then it's just about knowing how to work with what you've got. It's like, okay, let me sit with my manual and let me sit with your manual and let's see what's the best mechanics to set up so that this can work in harmony, so that I'm not making, like you said in the beginning, not making assumptions, not misunderstanding why you're doing certain things, not kind of judging things at face value and jumping to conclusions, all the stuff that causes a lot of heartache and dichotomy in terms of the ways that we come together.
Interesting. So it's not like, you know, our charts basically are just different puzzles that can be molded per se. And every puzzle can fit. We just almost have to transform it into a way that will fit by
We have to say things like, you know,
in a way.
For example, like if I was doing someone who was with you, I would say, you know, this will be a silly one, but like why Nick doesn't like to try new foods is not because the reason that you've, I don't know, maybe this partner of yours's father was super close to it, and so therefore she has a negative association with not trying new things. It's just because that is how his digestive system is set up, so that's how he gets to genius. And then all of a sudden that doesn't bother someone anymore, right? Because it's like, oh, I see the reasons why behind it. So it's all about understanding, but it's also about saying, you know, okay, both of us are non-emotionals, let's say you're both non-emotionals in a relationship. Oh, that means that when one of us, something has happened to one of us at work, and I bring that home and I feel super charged up by what I've picked up from everybody else, you're also a magnifier and I'm a magnifier. We're going to bounce what I picked up between us, and it's going to escalate and escalate and escalate. And we can end up having a fight that's actually not about either of us. It's to do with what I brought home. And so with two non-emotionals in a relationship, like, okay, there's a tool where when you both come together, you both recognize your non-emotionals. Let's shake off everything we've taken, picked up from the rest of the day, because you and I are actually blank slates. So let's be blank slates, cool, calm, and collected, our natural state together, right? So it's just about knowing these things and how do we make sure that we create harmony between the two different instruction manuals.
Oh, that's really fascinating. I really appreciate you sharing all that. Before I let you go, I was perusing your Instagram and I saw this little section in your highlights, you talking about toxic femininity, or if I'm enunciating that correctly. We talk a lot about toxic masculinity on this show and kind of redefining masculinity. And I think that's really great to do, and something I've always kind of been passionate about, because I've never considered myself to be more of the traditional, like, macho person, but I've always, you know, like, I've always, and so you've spoken a little bit about that, and this thought that might be something that my audience might be interested in hearing your thoughts on, because I found it really fascinating.
Well, the first thing to say that I said, I called it toxic femininity, because then that gives people an easy reference point for what I'm talking about, but I personally don't resonate with the toxic thing anyway.
Sure.
I just feel like if there's a conversation around what men are doing wrong to create, or the masculine energy is doing to create a you know, a lack of harmony in the world, then there's a lot that I feel that women do, and I talk about this from personal experience too, and I've definitely been there, where women have been conditioned that the only way to get your way is to kind of be sweet and small and cute and to be liked by everybody. And then therefore that in itself is a way to gain approval, gain validation, get your way, those types of things, rather than just be centered in yourself and say what you want and speak up for your needs in just a very calm way. I think there's a lot of, you know, even the small things, like, you know, how women, we've been taught, and it's very common, like, finish sentences on a high, you know? These little things that are subtle that actually smallen us and dampen us without anyone else participating in it, but we've done it ourselves, right? And, you know, especially in relationships, a lot of the times when women say, oh, I was with such a narcissist or whatever, it's like, hold on a second, if you believe that you create your reality and you pull in things that are an energetic match for you, then on some level, you're still running that program where it suits you for someone else to be the one that was in power and for you to be the sort of like more helpless or more swayable thing. And you've also radiated by showing up in that sort of people-pleasy or small or cutesified type of way that, you know, you're not worth having needs or being heard, because you can't be in the center of that yourself, so no one else can be there for you as well. And so I do personally feel like the feminine energy is just as wounded as the masculine energy in this type of world. And I think it's a lot more healthy to have a balanced discussion about where everybody has played a part in getting to us to this fractured place where we are now.
Well said. That's very interesting and something to think more on. I can't thank you enough for taking the time. This has been a ton of fun, you know, learning about human design. Yes. and sharing your information. Can you let my audience know, if they want to learn more about human design and learn more about you, where they can find you, and you know, how
sure.
they can just follow?
So to look up your human design, you go to myhumandesign.com. That's a software that I created myself, because the current softwares were very outdated and only created for PC. The planetary alignments weren't so accurate. So I worked with an astrophysicist to create a more accurate piece of software. So it's on there. And once you've looked up your chart for free, which will tell you all the basic things, you can find a video for every single aspect of your chart, all the different aspects we've talked about in your chart today. There's a 45-ish minute video describing each one. So if you add all those things up, you know, you can get 8 to 10 hours of content just about you. And then obviously you can do it for your kids, your family, your parents, your husbands, your wives, everybody. You can also book a reading with one of the readers that I've trained on my website as well, and dive into our complete sort of video offering there. So it's all kind of under one roof, myhumandesign.com. And then on Instagram, we're just my.humandesign for all the heavy, more human design info if you want to kind of learn along the way. And my personal Instagram is just at Jenna Zoe. That's JennaZ. You guys say ZOE.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much. This has been a ton of fun. I really appreciate it. Thank you guys, as always, for listening. Be sure to rate 5 stars. Sending your questions at asknick@castme.com. Cast with a K, as always. Hope you guys enjoyed this episode. And if there is nothing else, we will see you back on Monday. Bye.